Thanks for checking out Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul On Demand. In this episode, we have Adam Sanders, who just won The Road. It was a big reality show. Keith Urban, Gretchen Wilson, they were all on there. And we have Adam Sanders, the winner of that show. He played a tune for us. We can only play the end of it or else it'll get flagged and we'll have to pay a lot of money. But I'll play the end of it and then we'll jump right into the interview with Adam Sanders.
But do what you did to my head of mine.
Hey. So my question with artists like you that have been behind the scenes for so long is, how did nobody hear your voice? And like, I'm not a pro, I don't know anything about music notes, but as soon as you started singing, I was like, oh yeah, how did nobody put that together? Or did they, and you just didn't want to do it?
No, you know, I moved to Nashville to be an artist. You know, songwriting was just a way that got my foot in the door. And the fate of all of this is, I have an uncle that's in the music industry. He's a session musician, so he's a steel guitar player. He's played on every album from Cody Johnson to Taylor Swift to Sam Hunt, any and everything you think of. And when I was 12 years old, he called one day and he said, hey, have you ever thought about writing songs? And he said, that could be your way into the music industry one day because I know you want to move. So I started writing songs in high school, moved to Nashville, found my crew, got a publishing deal after being, you know, in town for 2 years, had a couple songs that went to radio and was number ones. And everything just kind of snowballed from there. And I think that my team at the time started looking at me saying, like, hey, why don't this guy start singing the songs that he's writing? And so we started putting out music in, you know, 2015. And it's just been this slow build. You know, I kind of always say it's like, you know, what I am today is a product of a lot of hard work and just a passion for music. You know, I didn't always sound this way. I hadn't always, you know, play guitar this way. And I still think that, like, I'm just a product of just someone that just keeps getting better every day because I just keep putting my head down and just looking at the next step in front of me.
Wow. And give me the story of the song you just played.
Yeah, His to Mine is a song that we have been holding in our back pocket for a while now. I love late 90s, early 2000s country music. Like, that is my bread and butter. I know it like the back of my hand. And I've always had 90s country as sort of the roots of my music, but I wanted to find a way, how do I make this branches of my music? And so this song is a product of that. You know, it reminds me of like an old Brooks and Dunn song or something. You know, like She Used to Be Mine, or She Ain't the Cheap Kind. Some of those kind of things. You know, and so this is one that I've teased a few times on my socials for like a year now. And every time I tease it, people are like, "We have to have the song," and it worked out perfect to where the song's going to be featured on Marshall's April the 12th. And so we're going to put this song out a couple days before, and just one I've been really excited about because this is like a passion of mine, is just like this style of music. You know, whether it's works, you know, in the broad landscape of you know, music today or not, this is like what I would do every day, all day, if I had the choice.
So Luke Grimes is a star of Marshall's. Yeah. He's coming out. He's working on a country album. Have y'all crossed paths?
So I saw him when I went out to Utah to shoot for Marshall's. He was kind of back behind the scenes doing his thing. And so we talked for a little bit. And
what did you guys talk about?
Well, we talked about, like him coming to Nashville and writing processes. And I asked him who he writes with. And he's, you know, rattled off a few names. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I write with him. And we realized that we have a lot of the same, you know, connections in the music industry. You know, so it was just really cool to kind of catch up with him a little bit and find out, you know, what makes his ticker tick, you know, like his type of music, you know, is a little bit different than mine. He kind of likes that, you know, old school stuff that's kind of like 80s and 70s, you know, kind of stuff. And I'm kind of like right in the middle of 90s country. And, you know, so it was just, we just talked over music and just kind of talked about our past.
Are you going to be on his album in any sort? Writing?
No, I wish. I mean, hey, if he called me, I wouldn't turn it down. I'll tell you that, but okay. No plans for that, but.
Do you have Taylor Sheridan's phone number?
I do not. Taylor is a guy that is such a like intense guy. And I said, like, the first time I met him, I was like, I can't tell if this guy has the success he has because how intense he is, or if he's intense because of the success he's had. You know, like what comes first? You know, but man, you know, spending time with him out on the road when we were filming The Road was just invaluable for me. You know, a guy with that much knowledge and success, and him just kind of sitting down with us and sharing his story and, you know, kind of instilling into us, you know, what he's been able to accomplish has really been awesome.
What would you say to like Luke Grimes advice-wise coming to Nashville?
You know, I think it's all about, Nashville's all about a community, right? You know, and like for me, what really helped me the most in my career was just finding my crew. And realizing also that like you could be really good friends with someone and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to write well together. Or, you know, you may not ever hang out with someone outside of a writing room, but you write great songs together. So just recognizing that as I think is a big thing.
Oh, wait, who's a really good friend that you don't write together with?
Oh, man. I've got a buddy of mine, Brian Callahan. That's a country music artist also. And, you know, like we spend so much time in the outdoors and stuff together, but like we don't necessarily like click that well, like in a room. But we've spent so much time together, you know, outside of that.
Well, I want to get into all these songs that you've written. Cause if people don't know this, you've written a lot of songs that are on the radio. I'm going to swing it for you one time.
Okay. Come on.
Single Saturday Night, Cole Swindell.
Nope, I didn't write that.
That's not right. Ain't Worth the Whiskey.
That's right. Ding, ding. We're one for one.
Beer Can't Fix.
Didn't write that.
Blue Tacoma.
Didn't write that.
Broken Heartsville.
Didn't write that.
Give me the ones you wrote.
Did you pull this from Wikipedia or something?
Yes.
Hey, if I would have written that many songs, I don't know if I'd be in this interview right now. I'd just bought an island somewhere or something and be like, peace out, Nashville. No. So Ain't Worth the Whiskey was my first number one.
How was that? Like, that's a huge number one.
Crazy, because we wrote this in a time when I didn't have a publishing deal. Cole was still selling T-shirts for Luke Bryan at the time. And our third co-writer, Josh Martin, was a security guard officer at Belmont University working night shifts. And so I was working in construction. We go into Sony Tree one afternoon to write this song. We honestly just wanted to write a breakup song for Cole. And honestly, we wanted to send this song on our iPhone to Cole's ex-girlfriend because they had just broken up. That was the whole premise of the song, was to be like, hey, we're about to tell you what we think about you for breaking my buddy's hearts. And we always joked between the three of us, we were like, hey, whoever gets a record deal first is putting this song out. And the song had been on hold for several artists through the years. I think Montgomery Gentry had it on hold at one point. I think Luke Bryan at one point, Easton Corbin. Cole gets a record deal, puts it out. It's his third number one, my first number one. And we wrote it 5 or 6 years before the song ever even came out.
When you guys wrote it for her, did you actually send it to the girl?
I don't know, but I'll tell you this. Like, this was it's so long ago, back in the MySpace days. You remember MySpace?
Yeah, of course.
So I was remember thinking in my mind, I was like, all right, if we write this and you send this to her, two things are going to happen. One, she's either going to text you back immediately and want you back because she knows you're about to be a big star because this song's great, or she's deleting you off of MySpace and she's blocking your number. One of the two.
What a great story. Yeah. Tell me about The Road, man. Did you expect to win?
Man, I felt like starting before I ever even got a call to do The Road, I never in a million years thought about doing a singing competition show. It just never was on my bingo card.
Yeah, yeah.
But the concept of The Road was so different that it was intriguing to me. And from the very beginning stages, I was like, man, this just feels right for me. And it all revolved around, you know, if I can go out and open for Keith Urban in real cities with real fans, play original music, full band, and have television behind it.
Wow.
Like that's a big thing. And so I felt like the first show I identified what it was going to take to win The Road. And my thought was that we were playing two songs a night and we were doing cut down versions of the song. So we basically had about 3 minutes to connect with an audience that was voting, you know, on your fate, whether they thought you were great or you were terrible. And I leaned into crowd participation and energy, energy, energy. And I feel like all the years that I spent on the road, you know, playing shows led me to this moment, to be ready for this moment, and being able to sort of pivot and understand what it was going to take. And so I think it came down to song selection was a huge thing, when you played songs, when and where. And then also just, you know, interacting with the crowd and making them feel a part of what you were doing and empowering them, because they had, you know, your fate in their hands. And so if you kind of built this bond between the two, they want to see you succeed and they're going to give you a high score.
Wow. And how close did you get with Keith Urban, or to Keith Urban?
Well, I'll tell you, one thing that was really cool, we were in Memphis and I did as one of my covers, Tim McGraw, I Like It, I Love It. Okay. And during rehearsal, Keith Urban comes up to me and he says, "You're not going to believe this, but I sang the demo to that song years ago." And he pulls out his phone and plays me the demo of him singing I Like It, I Love It.
What did that sound like?
I mean, like Keith Urban. Like,
wow.
I mean, it was so awesome. And he told me the whole story about him and Jerry Flowers going to the studio. They were demo singers back in the day. And Jerry goes to one studio and Keith goes to another. They get back in the car together and they're asking each other about each other's day. Like, "Hey, you know, how was the songs?" "Oh, it was good." And Keith said, "Yeah, my day was great. I sang this one song. Man, it was obnoxious, but it's probably going to be a big hit." And that was I Like It, I Love It.
Wow.
So yeah, so that was really cool for him to share that with me. And, you know, I had no idea that he had even been in town that long. And, you know, I knew that he had been in Nashville several years, but to think, man, he sang the demo of I Like It, I Love It. Like, I was 6 years old singing that song in talent competitions back in North Florida where I'm from, you know, so like, that's just a crazy, crazy story.
Did you notice how he smells? He's got this dog.
Man, he's got like swagger. Like, got this loose, confident swagger.
Yeah. But the smell has been the topic of a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
No one knows where the cologne comes from. People think it's an exclusive mix.
Well, when I came home off the road, my girlfriend at the time, she was like, "You smell different." And I was like, "That's Keith Urban. Just staying
I'm
on me for like
you,
a week."
That's the thing. Yeah. When he came in here, like, it was in the walls.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, yeah, he, okay, okay. Was there anything from the road that you wish fans would have got the chance to see that maybe got cut?
I think just a little bit more behind the scenes of the grind of being out on the road. You know, like, for me, I was out 10 solid weeks, right? And so I was a guy that, like, I didn't want to take a chance on going out at night, chances of getting sick, you know, so I would stay in my room and just watch college basketball. You know, we were filming this February, March, and April, so it was right around March Madness. So I'm just watching basketball and going to the gym. My back went out almost towards the end of filming this thing. And I was, if we would have had to perform the day my back went out or the day after, I would have literally had to just tap out. I was in that much pain. Luckily, I had a couple days and I went and got some shots in my back and I was fine, you know, after that. But just kind of just more behind the scenes, the grind of all of it, man. Like, it's just, there's so many things. Cody, who was on the show, had a kidney stone. I wish they would have kind of, you know, told more about that. And Billy Joe got the flu, you know, and so just more.
Cody doesn't wish that.
No. Well, he was in a lot of pain. I can tell you that. Yeah.
It's crazy. And a lot of times people who win shows like that aren't able to take full advantage of the moment. Were you able to take full advantage of the moment since you've already had, you know, done some stuff?
I think I was. And the reason behind that is I was always a guy early in my career that was looking for the next thing. I'll never forget my first number one party that I went to was a year after the song was number one. And my publisher at the time told me, she said, "Adam," she said, "you don't even look like you care to be here." And in my mind, I said, "I'm on to the next thing." I had another song that was top 15 on the radio and I was looking for a triple play award, which is 3 number ones in 1 year. And I was, you know, 15 spots away from getting that. And she looked me dead in the eye and she said, "Hey," she said, "you should live right here in this moment because you never know when you're going to have another number one." And that taught me a lesson because I haven't had a number one, you know, since that. And so I think because of that, slowing down, you know, the older that I am, to really look and smell the roses has been, you know, a big lesson for me. And so I did everything I could to really just relish in those moments.
You get the money yet?
I did.
Wow.
I did.
Already?
I got it. I got it right before Christmas.
Wow. I
bought an engagement ring with it, and so I got engaged in January, which is awesome.
Wait, sorry. How do you decide how much of that goes to the engagement ring? Because, excuse me, a lot of times the woman will be like, yo, you won $250. I want a $250 rock.
Well, I kind of set a budget in my head of what it was going to, you know, what I was willing to spend on it. And I talked to a lot of buddies, and I was like, hey, what'd you spend?
Okay.
So I got like five or six of my buddies, and I just got an average in the middle of, you know, it.
Wow.
And I was able to get a picture from her sister that she had sent to her years ago to help me figure out what the ring looked like and all of that. And so, you know, was able to go get it. Went to Genesis here in, you know, Nashville and got it and went to Denver. But I'm also doing this big house remodel project at my house right now where we're redoing the whole outside of my house, you know. And so every time I've ever made money in my career, I've always put it back into my career. So, you know, whether I had a number one in songwriting money, I would fund an album project for myself, or I'd go shoot content. This was the first time where I had a little bit of money where I said, you know what, like, I want to enjoy a little bit of this money, you know, because this may not ever.
All right, let's bring in Billy Dukes to talk about this interview with Adam Sanders. I love this guy, man.
I loved how Ain't Worth the Whiskey was so petty. Like, they wrote that song just to send to an ex-girlfriend, and that is just like the epitome of like songwriter pettiness, and I love it.
Yeah, that is so cool just to think about that. Like, because I know a lot of the songwriting sessions in Nashville are put together by record labels, and you know, they say, hey, I want you three to sit in a room and come and write a song. And I've heard stories from artists that, you know, they, instead of writing a song, they said, let's just go get a beer. And then they ended up writing a song. This tops them all, man. They were like, you know, let's just write a song to send to an ex. And that is one of the best stories. We need to get it out there. It needs to be out there more. For everybody needs to know that.
Well, and we need to get the Cole Swindell angle. Like, I need to know if he actually, because it's one thing, like, we've all written the breakup letter, right? But to actually put it in the mail or send the text or the email, that's a whole nother thing. Like, usually that doesn't get sent for the better.
Yeah.
Did he send the song?
Yeah, and they full sended it. They fully sent it. It was a huge song. True. For Cole, still is, you know, when it comes on. It was one of my favorites. I wish I had known that at the time. I could have laughed instead of being mad about my ex every time it came on.
I think I've sent the letter once, and like years later, the girl called up and was like, wanted to get together and hang out. I'm like, oh, no, that's a trap. I sent the letter. I know what I did, and that was a mistake. I am not falling into that mistake again. Like, that's a bad idea.
Wait, what kind of letter? Was it like a scathing breakup letter?
She actually broke up with me because I think of some other dude.
Oh.
So I like, and it was a tough time in my life, and I wrote the letter. And this is before email, you know, this is the late 90s. I guess there was email around, but I wasn't emailing yet. So I put it in the mail and put the stamp on it. And
wow. Billy Dukes, I never would have thought, man. I've never done anything like that.
I received a couple of letters, too, like back in college. Like, I think there were two different girls. One girl, jeez, like, wrote me like a seven pager.
Oh.
So
yeah,
like, this is why we broke up, because you're.
Yeah, I dated one girl that would dot all of her I's with a heart, and it was like, it was a lot. It was a lot to read on paper. You know, it was a lot.
Yeah,
but I don't think I've ever sent a scathing letter. Yeah, I just took it on the chin, man, because I've pretty much only been dumped, and I'm just like, whatever. I try to get him back for a little bit, and I'm just glad I'm married for like 10 years or whatever.
100%.
Yeah.
So Adam was interesting because I talked to him kind of off camera like a week prior to you, and he's a big fan of Taste of Country and what we've done for him. Like, we've been covering Adam Sanders now for about a decade, and I did an interview with him, I think, 2015 or 2016 or so, and I thought to myself, wow, this guy is huge star, right? He just has that sort of aura about him and that confidence and energy. He's really likable. The song seemed to be right there. And then for whatever reason, it never really worked. And I think it was kind of for the reasons that he described to you, in that they just kind of got pegged as a songwriter. But also, I just don't think he had a sharp enough brand at the time. He was just kind of like another white guy country singer. And that was tough to distinguish him then. So the show really did him a lot of good, I feel like.
Yeah, I always wonder about that when songwriters, because, you know, like Jason Aldean, some of the biggest artists came to Nashville just to write songs. And it's crazy to me that there's a percentage of them that just write songs, and there's a percentage of them that someone, you know, puts a light in their head like, I should sing these. And then the fact that they can sing too, I can only compare it to the only thing in life I know is baseball. That's like someone that pitches but also catches. Like, that's awesome. You know, I mean, the fact that you can write a song and then sing it as well. So kudos to him for getting on the show, and, you know, kudos for the show for doing what it did. Is there going to be a second season? Dude, I talked to him about that. He said there was.
He said he didn't know. Okay. Like he legitimately seemed to not know if there'd be a second season of this show, which is a little wild to me, because I thought the show was pretty good. I watched every episode, and I thought it was unique, a really enjoyable watch. It was on Sunday night on CBS. Maybe the date and time didn't work, but I thought the ratings, maybe the ratings weren't there, but it couldn't have been that expensive to produce the whole thing. But they filmed it all 1 year ago. They filmed season one about a year ago. So, like, they would be actively filming now, and we haven't gotten any sense that they are filming season two.
Yeah, I remember when they started filming a year ago, it was a big deal because we were able to write articles about it on Taste of Country. We were like, Keith Urban is going to be playing a dive bar in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And people were freaking out trying to get tickets. And yeah, I think it's a cool idea. You know, Lord knows we don't need another basic singing show where they just sing and the chair spins around like a ride at Disneyland, you know, whatever. This was a cool idea. And maybe they can get the same people to sign back on. You know, I don't know. Blake Shelton seems to retire every year, so I'm not sure if he'll come back.
Here's kind of the thing I wondered about the show. Like, if you're a fan of the show and you're listening to this interview, like, you might have had the same question. Like, Adam Sandler was so ingrained in Nashville, and the finale was in Nashville, that once that happened, I thought to myself, oh, he's just going to stock the Ryman Auditorium with his friends, and boom, that's how he won. And I asked him that, and he said, no, that wasn't possible. He was only allowed to invite, like, three friends, his mom, his dad, and, like, maybe his girlfriend, now fiancé, like. So it wasn't, by any stretch of the imagination, a hometown crowd for him like I thought it might be.
Yeah, and how about Taylor Sheridan, like, taking over TV and country music? This was a show produced by Taylor Sheridan and Blake Shelton. So, like, if you don't not familiar with Taylor Sheridan, he did Yellowstone and Marshalls and everything else now, it seems, on TV. So I think that he has his own fandom built in, you know, kind of like the Stranger Things brothers that,
right,
you know, so I think that that's a whole deal in itself.
Yeah, and an apparent, like, this song that from Adam Sandler is on the April 12th episode of Marshalls, but, like, that wasn't one of the stipulations of winning the road. Like, there was things that he was guaranteed. He got the $250,000. He gets to appear at Stagecoach. Of course, there's the Keith Urban, opening for Keith Urban, and then one other package tied to his sponsor. This appearance, and he's actually in the episode singing the song, like, this was just something, like, this was a bonus that Taylor Sheridan sort of included, or that he was able to do because of the show. It wasn't
part of
the package in any way.
That's cool. Good for him, man. I'm glad his career is, like, catching the way he, you know, wanted to, and didn't really necessarily envision that it would, you know, coming to town as a songwriter. So yeah, he's a real, real good dude. Natural singer, man. Got the swag, man. I think he has a promising future in the genre for sure.
I get a sense that we're going to see more country artists, maybe even weekly or biweekly on this show, Marshalls, if it continues now, because we've had Ella Langley, or not Ella Langley. We've had Riley Green. We've had Ashley Cook. Now Adam Sandler's, like, this could be kind of a deal here where every week or two there's an artist performing at this little bar, And it's kind of a little Easter egg for people in the know. Yeah. It's fun little, it's a new little reason to watch the show, which is, I think is neat.
Yeah, amen. Well, hopefully they come up with a new season, if not for everybody that watches it, just for you, man.
So, quick plug here before we wrap. He performed the song His to Mine, and I know we can't use the audio of that here in the podcast, but we do have the YouTube video of that available. If you search Taste of Country on YouTube, you can find Adam Sanders in this acoustic performance of His to Mine.
Yeah, because I was only able to play like the last 12 seconds in the beginning of this podcast. Yeah. So that's good. Thank you for mentioning that. And for everyone else, hey, coming up next week on the show, on the podcast, we have Aaron Watson and Larkin Poe are going to join us. It'll be a twofer. Nice. And still to come, amazing interviews that we had. Amy Grant came in. Ty Herndon just released a book. He's going to be in. And then Corey Kent and Wade Jennings on the horizon as well here on Taste of Country Nights on Demand.